think we've heard so wonderfully about so many parts of Mother's life. I'm going to just try to round out with a couple of other aspects that may have been brought less to the fore. One thing, Mother was more than an individual, very much like my friend Nolene Mills, who just died recently and whose family is here today, and who was often mistaken for a true Levy when at Caruso's and Robertson's and the real institutions of Chestnut Hill, where I was not considered a real Levy. She, both Nolene and my mother, were institutions. A whole constellation of activities and events buzzed around her, put into motion by her imagination. And that extraordinary sense and great power in knowing that there is something that you want and it's the right thing and everyone else should just get down to it and do it. I want to talk a little bit about Mother's incredible sense of social justice. It seems tremendously ironic, her Quakerism, because she was a tremendous sensualist as well. And many people, seeing the way she lived, my father used to say, high thinking and plain living, her outfit never understood. But in fact, she had an enormous sense of social and environmental justice. And it was something that she passed down to me. And she had an enormous drive to make the world a better place. It was one of the reasons that she became a member of this meeting. She used to tell me that the Friends believed that faith in God is revealed by good works. In the 1930s, Mother worked for the League of Women Voters in many capacities, but of course for me personally the most important was as head of the Conservation Committee, where she worked for Open Space in Philadelphia. And there she met Walter Phillips, who is the father of my friend Anna, who is here. And they then worked together in the City Beautiful movement and later for charter reform, which was the roots of the reform of, you remember, the very, very corrupt Philadelphia city government. And for Mother, of course, her efforts culminated in a great dinner party in which she saved the City Planning Commission. In the 1940s, as co-chairman of the Germantown-Chestnut Hill Housing Committee, and that she did with Bill Cole, and Ned is right over there, they undertook, as you know, and Lewis has begun to talk about, these three extraordinary and successful initiatives. One, they stopped redlining, and that meant that minorities who were basically confined to North Philadelphia were allowed, because they could get bank loans, to move into Mount Airy and Germantown. She insisted that public housing should not be high-rise, way before her time. And she got Lewis Sauer to be the architect of Morton, and she used to drive me over there very proudly. Morton looks like real houses and is two-story and fits into the neighborhood of Germantown rather handsomely. She also, of course, attacked the substandard housing and had outdoor toilets made illegal. And she used to tell me about this ferociously when I was young and take me around and show me these things and tell me how bad they were. She knew Rufus Jones and Clarence Pickett, who were great fervent Quakers of the late 40s and 50s. I went to work camp frequently. I went to Germantown Friends, of course, but Mother always urged me to go. She said, Clarence Pickett is having a work camp. You have to go. You have to find out. Clarence Pickett gave a wonderful set of workshops called an Urban Minorities Close-Up, where, you know, very innocent Eisenhower middle-class children were shown the courts and the jails and slum housing and what it was really like to live in the city if you were poor. And all of these things, I think, she didn't integrate her sense of social justice with her art, But I think she gave me such a strong sense of it that that was one of the inheritances that she gave to me. Many people talked about how she pushed people into things, and they were first irritated, and then surprised, and then absolutely delighted. And I'd like to say, because people from Manitoba are here, and Annie Wright is here, that Russell Wright, and introducing Russell to me, and introducing me to Manitoba, which is an absolutely extraordinarily magical place. And when I was 16, my mother would say, you have to go up and visit Russell Wright. You know he has a waterfall in his bathroom. And I would say, oh God, Mom, leave it alone. Of course, I've become a complete adherent. Russell has become a mentor in my entire life. And I just find that there were so many things. She had a deep sense of quality. And although you were always sort of reluctant to join into the things that she wanted to bring you into with this great protean exuberance, you found that after a while, they were just the right thing after all. Over the past 10 years, the tempest, the peripatetic juggernaut, the queen of the road who went up the runway street, and as David told you, actually what happened was a poor young man was coming down the other direction, and she leaned out of the car. I was in the car with her, and she said, young man, we're going the wrong way. I was so cowed by her complete certainty that he turned around and the absolute demon of energy was transformed into an extraordinary, sweet, older woman. Some people become quite nasty when they're old. But my mother underwent the most extraordinary transformation and became absolutely benign. She always greeted us with how nice it is to see you. She always said, thank you for coming to see me. She always had something kind and wonderful to say. I used to read to her and she would say wonderful things. I'd read her from biblical archaeology because she loved archaeology. And she'd say, I didn't know King David's castle was found on that hilltop. And then she'd blank out completely. But she was alert in moments until the very end. In early December, Lewis and Terry and I took her to the late Delacroix exhibit at the Museum of Art here. And I was wheeling her around. It was quite dark, and there were these sort of large Delacroix paintings, and Mother wasn't saying anything. So I asked her, Mom, how do you like these pictures? And she looked at me right in the eye, and she said, these are decadent. I don't like them at all. Take me into the other room to see the Henry Moores. And lastly, I'd just like to talk about the love and loyalty that she brought out in the extraordinary people who cared for her, many of whom are sitting here today. I'm going to start with Fred, who was the man of her house. Fred drove her around. It was a marriage made in heaven. Fred was a retired bus driver, and my mother was forcibly retired by us from being able to be queen of the road. It was a very sad time. She thought she had lost her independence, but Fred came into her life and began to take her on the most extraordinary adventures. I would hear that they had driven up to the Delaware Water Gap back in one day. I used to have to spend the night when I went up to the Delaware. It was so tiring. We used to be stopped on the street by people who said, I saw Fred Graves taking care of your mother, and it's the most extraordinary thing. That man is just a saint. And she'd always smile when he came in, and they'd play the straight man. Fred, mother would come up Very argumentative still in her older times as they would drive. She was a great front seat driver. She'd say, "Fred, why are you stopping?" She'd say, "Mrs. Levy, that's a red light." Lillian, Anthony, who took care of her for 10 years, who washed her, who bathed her, towards the end, brushed her teeth, helped to feed her, basically took care of so much. The most extraordinary, and we talked about how argumentative Mother was. In the old days, she and Lillian, as Mary Sienko and all the ones who went before her, "No, Mrs. Levy, that's not right." They would go right at it. And in the end, they were just, Lillian was taking her out to wonderful places. Mother would go in bars. They would go to incredible places. And Terry, who came later and worked on the weekends, Terry Stewart, who also was just extraordinary with Mother and has said that she was very glad that Mother really, in a way, rescued her and gave her a refuge. And then there, something quite extraordinary, she said she found a great deal of peace when she came to Mother's. She also took the most loving care of our Mother and again, bathed her, did everything that needs to be done. Mother had the most extraordinary care and inspired in people a sense of real caring. And lastly, Sylvester, who worked for Mom for 25 years, was sometimes tormented by my mother. She used to call me up and say, "Miss Levy wants me here and there." Sylvester used to bring her breakfast every morning. She'd yell at him for not doing it right. I could never understand this because, as we all know, none of us will ever have breakfast brought to them again. They rubbed her feet. They rinsed her mouth out. Sylvester, you know, stayed with her, kept her company. He called her his best girl and said that he wanted her to save the last dance for him. Yes, I have this little phrase written down. He used to call me up and say, "Oh, honey, honey, your mother is driving me." At the grave, Sylvester said something that I just want to end with. He said, we made a little box for Mother's ashes, my Colin made it, out of a board that we had cut down in Maine during the ice storm that had fallen, and buried Mother's ashes in it. And at the grave, Sylvester said, "By the power invested in me, may the Lord God preserve her and keep her, and the Lord let her have a place in your heaven." Aww.